In today's day and age, in 2024, we've all heard of the US DoD's videos captured of UFOs. Many of us have heard of US Navy or Air Force pilots encountering UFOs on their missions, such as the testimony of Commander David Fravor and Ryan Graves. But what we hardly hear are the stories of US servicemen encountering UFOs at home or overseas. Today, I'd like to tackle two alleged stories of U.S. Marine veterans getting a little too close for comfort with UAP. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I am UAP Gerb, and welcome back for a shorter documentary-style video today where we tackle two cases of Marines encountering UFOs during their service abroad. These are two fascinating stories, especially the first I'm about to tell you, so sit back, relax, and think about these wild tales.
It's not from Earth. I mean, I knew that when I looked at it, you know. I mean, I'm not doing this to make money.
In February of 1997, USMC Lance Corporal Jonathan Weygandt was transferred to Pucallpa Air Base in Peru to serve in Operation Laser Strike, a U.S. Southcom mission involving up to 20 agencies such as the USMC, CIA, USAF, etc. The goal of this mission was to counter narcotic operations in Peruvian airspace. While serving as a Stinger Avenger gunner ordered to perform perimeter security for the base, Weygandt would encounter something truly out of this world. Jonathan, while serving with the Marine MAG-G 28 team under command of Master Sergeant Chris Diggins and Major Bob Cole, recalled hearing USAF personnel discussing the tracking of UFOs displaying strange characteristics. Now, it's worth noting the Pucallpa Air Base employed numerous data acquisition methods, including TPS-43 and ROTHR, relocatable over the horizon, radar, as well as CIA Cessna Citation spotter aircrafts, so the base had numerous methods to garner multi-sensor detection. During a late-night guard detail in March or April, Jonathan, Staff Sergeant Montalegre, Sergeant Allen, and Sergeant Atkins were all ordered to secure the crash site of a potentially friendly downed aircraft. We can see in the image on screen a shootdown occurred on the 25th of March by an A-37, sending the target crashing into a large fireball. By early morning, the platoon of Marines reached near the designated area with their Humvees, needing to cross the remaining distance through the bush. Jonathan himself says, quote, "We found the area really easily because there was a huge gash in the land where something had landed." Weygandt, Atkins, and Allen went on to pursue the crashed aircraft while the remaining Marines stayed at the crash site. It's important to note this crash site is all these remaining Marines witnessed. Then, Weygandt saw the object.
And when I first saw it, you know, I was scared. It scared, you know, the heck out of me. You know, I didn't know what to do, and it was just, it was really confusing.
Weygandt saw a craft with the following characteristics. Egg-shaped, with its narrow end jutting out of a cliff face. The craft looked metallic, but with fluctuations you'd see in a liquid. The surface was constantly changing, described by Weygandt as gasoline dripping into water. Large vents that looked similar to fish gills. A dull humming sound emanated from the object, instilling fear and unease in the Marines. And finally, a large gash in the side of the object. Weygandt guessed this may have been caused by a Hawk missile system. Atkins and Allen ordered Weygandt to move away from the craft. And when the trio were departing the craft, Weygandt noticed a group of men heading towards him from two landed US Army CH-47 helicopters. The men wore black fatigues, hazmat suits, and DOE rain jackets. Weygandt was arrested, stripped of his gear, had his wrists cable tied, and was taken aboard a CH-47 and interrogated and verbally attacked for 15 hours.
Still to this day, but anyway, I was arrested. I had all my gear taken from me by men in black camis, had no name tags. They were older men, probably in their late 30s or 40s.
The lieutenant colonel Weygandt was handed to forced him to sign paperwork Jonathan didn't even read as he was so scared. Then he was lumped in with USAF personnel for 3 weeks before being sent back to the States.
They had the big D, you know, Delta Oscar Echo on the back of their back, and a couple of the guys were wearing like these rain jackets.
Forget for a second what Jonathan saw. Think about who he saw. Who wears black camo with little to no insignia alongside men in DOE rain jackets? My guess is the shadow DOE special response team called Nuclear Commandos. This highly trained Spec Ops group has arrest authority when dealing with protection of DOE national labs and assets. Special response teams at this time in 97 were made up of contractors like EG&G. But let's go deeper. The DOE SRT is part of NEST, the Nuclear Emergency Search Team. NEST is comprised of special forces, scientists, technicians, and engineers combined with U.S. Army 52nd EOD for a variety of emergency responses. And let's note real fast that NEST technical information is covered and protected like that of special access programs. Not to mention, the main intelligence for NEST is the National Reconnaissance Office, NRO, and CIA, and supported by DOE contractors such as EG&G, Raytheon, and Lockheed Martin. And as we know, the Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission were formerly known as the AEC, the Atomic Energy Commission. This AEC has been name-dropped extensively in regards to classification of crashed UFO materials and craft, just like how they are named in the 2024 UAP NDAA legislation by Chuck Schumer, stating the AEC is used to misclassify UAP records as transclassified foreign nuclear material and thus exempt from disclosure. This discussion of the DOE complicit with crashed UAP gives a lot of credibility to Weygandt's testimony, in my opinion. Now, just for reference, the video I have been playing is Weygandt's 2001 interview with Stephen Greer for his Disclosure Project. After he told of this experience, Weygandt essentially went quiet until 2023, never trying to gain or profit from his experience. What do you think about his story? I'll give my thoughts at the end of the video, but keep this playing in your head. Think about what he said, think about the ties to the DOE, and think about that egg-shaped craft which is often described by people who experience UAP, especially that of UFO whistleblower Eric Tabor, who surmised that a egg-shaped craft was held in Area 51. We discussed this entry in Layer 1 of my Alien and UFOs Obscure Oddities Iceberg, so check that out, it's pretty interesting. Next, we move on to another man that released his story due to the work done by Stephen Greer and his Disclosure Project, Michael Herrera. In the summer of 2023, just after the revelations of David Grush went public, Herrera featured for his first public appearance on Greer's panel with the National Press Club. Herrera's story is both scintillating and extremely disturbing, if true. In fact, it's one of the strangest first-hand encounters I have ever heard. At 20 years old in 2009, USMC Rifleman Herrera was sent to Indonesia on a humanitarian mission following the Sumatra earthquake and tsunami. In October of 2009, Herrera and five Marines were in the process of hiking a 900-foot ridge to take position for a supply drop when the team spotted a strange object in the jungle. Herrera claimed to see something moving and rotating, pulsating colors between a light matte gray to an absurdly dark matte black. Quote, the huge object, like an octagonal pyramid was emitting a low hum, end quote, Michael said as he described a scaly exterior which looked man-made but like no known type of craft. Here he saw this craft being loaded with supplies by unmarked U.S. forces. Similar to Weygandt, these men wore black fatigues without insignia. His unit moved in for a closer look due to not possessing radios on the short hike to the supply drop, so they couldn't radio in what they were witnessing. Getting close to the craft, the Marines were ambushed and held at gunpoint by the paramilitary unit. The men spoke in American accents, and the Marines' camera and gear were confiscated as they were told not to disclose this sighting. The men were eventually released, and Herrera was later told by a USAF lieutenant colonel, quote, "You're not allowed to talk about what happened. You will go to prison or you will die," end quote. Herrera became emboldened to break his 14-year silence by new UFO whistleblower protections, and in April testified under oath about his wild story, while also fearing reprisals for his knowledge of the going-ons in the Indonesian jungle. So, what did Herrera see? If his story is true, we must assume that these men were piloting an ARV, an alien reproduction vehicle. And we must now realize that these ARVs are real and utilized by shadow US military factions. This would mean that certain reverse engineering programs, such as discussed in the Wilson-Davis memo, have succeeded in translating craft of non-human origin into human hands. Historically, there have been rumors that Lockheed Martin and their special project Astra has been able to reverse engineer a triangular-shaped aircraft known famously as the TR-3B, but this craft Herrera witnessed seemed massive and octagonal in shape. But what were these unmarked men loading? Well, according to Herrera, unmarked trucks were preparing to load weapons onto the craft, but one truck in particular was hauling a small storage crate. Herrera only got a brief look at this crate, but described some sort of temperature, humidity, and air control system on the exterior of the crate, leading him to believe that possibly biologics and maybe even some humans or ETs were being transported within this crate. Now, I'm still in the process of learning more about this case since Herrera has just come out publicly, but he is a native of Denver and currently resides here, so I might actually try to find his contact information and get in touch with him so I can learn a little more from him about his experience. My friends, thank you for joining me for another video. Today, I wanted to take a little break from the Iceberg series and make something a little more documentary style again. The case of Jonathan Weygandt is often on my mind. I can't stop thinking about it, so I wanted to make a video on some close encounters seen by Marines. I'm going to be honest, guys. I believe the story of Jonathan Weygandt. I think the story he tells, compared with his body language, is credible. Especially when it boils down to the DOE and the nuclear commandos he saw, the men in black insignia with the DOE jackets. I think that is an example of the NEST program and whatever part of the DOE-affiliated SAPs. I think that's them uncovering a crash retrieval. And whatever that craft is so interesting. The way Weygandt describes the gills and the water over oil, mother of pearl effect. It's just absolutely fascinating to me, especially the low humming that instilled fear in him and his fellow Marines. That's something that's very similarly encountered in many cases, some slight psychological effects of fear or calmness. So I think his story is fascinating. Now, for Michael Herrera, I'm torn on his story. For one, it is true that he testified to Congress or behind closed doors in April of 2023, giving his account. But on the other hand, I know Stephen Greer likes to press the ARV and that most UFOs are alien reproduction vehicle theory. I am of the mind that I don't know if humans have been able to successfully reverse engineer any sort of non-human intelligence technology. If you listen to the Wilson Davis memo, if you listen to Ross Coulthart, if you listen to David Grush, hell, even if you listen to Bob Lazar, they've all said whatever we have our hands on, it is so beyond human comprehension and capability that even without the agonizingly slow progress of compartmentalization, they don't know if we'd ever be able to harness whatever this technology is. I mean, look at what we talked about in the first layer of the iceberg in Area 51 with Eric Tabor, that egg-shaped craft. It was described as smooth with no rivets or welding areas, and it had no visible entry points into the craft. I mean, that's similarly described to Weygand's craft, but with the gills and so forth. So I'm not sure about that. And if a craft has been successfully reverse engineered, it is the TR-3B, that triangular craft. Think of the Belgian UFO wave in the 90s, where so many black triangle craft were seen, usually with three red lights, with one light seen under the middle. If anything's a human-made craft, it's those triangles. But what did you guys think? Let me know in the comments. I'd like to discuss this further. I'd really like more from Weygand to sink my teeth into it. And I will reach out to Herrera if I can find him. I'd love to talk to the guy, find out more, find out the names of his fellow Marines. But we'll now be back to regular programming with Iceberg Layer 3 and 4, and then maybe I'll make another documentary, and then 5 and 6. So stay tuned. I hope you enjoyed this mini doc and found some interest in these cases. Let me know what you think. Later, guys.